The short story, "They Think You're One of Us." "They're gonna kill you." It was Chesnick, the cop. I turned to see him shouting at me from his patrol car. "What?" I shouted back as I continued running my Woodward Avenue sidewalk route. "They're gonna kill you," he repeated. "Who?" I asked, coming to a stop to hear his reply. "The gangs, that's who," he said, as though the answer was obvious. "Why? Why would they want to kill me?" "You won't believe this, Ekman. They think you're one of us," he said, laughing. "They think I'm an asshole?" "Very funny. Keep it up, and we won't protect your liberal white ass." "But seriously," I pleaded, "why do they want to kill me? What did I do?" He then gestured to his head. "It's that silly wire you got stuck in your ear." "What?" I answered, even more dumbfounded. "Your radio with the earplug and that blue sweatsuit. They think you're a cop," he said in a much more serious tone. "It's a Walkman," I protested, as if someone who mattered was listening. "You think you're dealing with rocket scientists here? These guys are idiots. All they know is that you're wearing a radio with an earplug and you run through the Brewster Project every night. Now tell me, who would do anything that crazy unless, of course, he was a cop?" "It's true. I did run through the project. It was part of my nightly run. I don't know why I chose the Brewster as part of my route. I just did. Maybe it was a way of showing that this was my Detroit, too. Maybe I was staking claim, proclaiming to all I'm here to stay. Some friends accused me of having a death wish, and they said that this was proof of it. Actually, I think it was my mountain to climb and to prove I could do it. However, I actually had come to believe that I was a fixture in the neighborhood. A novelty for sure, but I believed I was safe. Well, so much for that. What should I do?" I asked, wanting to hear an answer. "First, I'd get rid of that friggin' radio, and then I'd start acting like a white man," Chesnick snapped back. "Which means?" I asked. "Act scared even if you're not," he responded, as if he really believed what he was saying. "These people are animals. You got to treat them that way. It's the only way you can survive down here. If you think they're just like you, you're going to end up getting killed." I knew he was serious about that, and I'm sure he actually believed what he was saying. I'm also sure the idealism, which led him to become a cop in the beginning, had left him long ago. Would I end up being a Chesnick? Would the Cass Corridor finally take its toll on me as well? I hope not. But for the moment, my idealism was being pushed aside by the real world and the need to survive. "Do me a favor, Chesnick. Tell the gangs I'm not one of you, okay?" Chesnick smiled. "Don't worry. I'll just tell them you're as crazy as your buddy Crispin's. I usually leave the loons alone." Then he laughed and drove away, leaving me there on Woodward Avenue. I stood there for a moment, looking around at the broken concrete of the sidewalk and the empty storefronts, including the Stone Burlesque and the theater, now a bowling alley, where Harry Houdini made his final performance. He died a short time later at Grace Hospital, where he was taken, which was just a few blocks away. A smile came to my face as I thought, how fitting. Houdini's presence was still being felt, with more tricks being performed here in the corridor than anywhere else in Detroit. The corridor was indeed notorious for having more prostitutes per square mile than any other neighborhood in Detroit. Most hotel rooms here were rented several times a day. I looked down at my watch and realized that it was getting late, and I still had to run the Brewster. I started to run, and then I stopped, long enough to pull my Walkman earplug out and tuck it safely inside my sweatshirt. I may be crazy, I thought, but I'm not stupid.